Volume 3, Chapter 10, Reaction in New York. Neither was New York laggard in protesting the molasses tax. The New York Assembly appointed a committee in September 1764 to draft a protest against infringing the right to be taxed only by consent. The Assembly approved the committee's statement the following month, and, unlike Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island, made absolutely no concessions to a supposed expediency. The historian Bernhard Nolenberg justly called the New York Assembly's addresses, one each to the Houses of Commons and Lords and the King, among the great state papers of the pre-revolutionary period. Thus the Assembly's remonstrance and petition to the Commons took its stand against taxation without representation squarely on the natural right of private property. The exemption from such taxation was not simply a privilege, but a natural right of mankind, a right inseparable from the very idea of property. For who can call that his own, which can be taken away at the pleasure of another? The petition expressly repudiated the artificial distinction between internal and external taxation, since all impositions, whether they be internal taxes or duties paid for what we consume, equally diminish the estates upon which they are charged. The New York petitions were prepared by three New York City lawyers, the liberal leaders of New York, John Morin Scott, William Smith, Jr., who wrote the drafts, and the eminent liberal William Livingston, the leading theoretician. As early as March, Livingston had written of his implacable hostility to the deep-formed and steadily prosecuted plan of the British ministry to reduce us by degrees to perfect vassalage. A judiciary appointed by the Crown, a standing army among us, a measure absolutely inconsistent with civil liberty, and now the crushing the trade of North America in such essential articles as must reduce us to beggary. Should they also carry another favorite point, subjecting us to the payment of the national tax, we should certainly envy the superior political happiness of the French. The boldness and daring of New York's action was undoubtedly traced to the shock of a recent message by Governor Cadwallader Colden, ordered by the Board of Trade. Colden urged the unilateral annulment of a huge land grant of 800,000 acres that had been given by Governor Cornbury to 13 grantees in 1708. Underlying Colden's urging was a threat of further parliamentary coercion to annul the grant. By 1764, ownership of this tract, the Cayo de Roseros grant, between the Hudson and Mohawk rivers, was widely distributed through all the leading families of New York province. The sudden suggestion for abrogation of the grant, almost a half century later, came as a severe blow to New Yorkers, who also scented a precedent for other reevaluations of land titles. The questioning of the Cayo de Roseros grant was ostensible altruism in behalf of the probably defrauded Mohawk sellers of the land, but the Assembly correctly suspected chicanery behind the altruistic mask. All the Crown officials involved stood to gain handsomely by the annulment. Governor Colden stood to earn £10,000, his fee for regranting the Cayo de Roseros land. Colden's son, Alexander, £4,000 in fees as surveyor general of land in New York for the regranting. The Crown itself would gain from an increased annual quit-rent payment of over £1,500 for negotiating the lands, and Sir William Johnson, the Crown's superintendent of the Northern Indians, who pushed the Mohawk claim, had received overlapping land grants from from the Crown and from the Mohawks of over 100,000 acres in the same area. Colden agreed to back Johnson's highly dubious Indian claim after Johnson offered him 10,000 acres from the tract. The New York Assembly swiftly and angrily rejected the whole scheme, and no doubt its reaction radicalized the Assemblymen into taking a firm, principled stand on the molasses tax.